Welcome to the Keystone Kickoff Show, brought to you by the Keystone Sports Network. Get the best Penn State sports news and analysis at KeystoneSportsNetwork.com or download the Keystone Sports app from your smartphone.
Hello and welcome to the Keystone Kickoff Show. I am Jim Galante. He is Andy Shea. Another cold, cold Pennsylvania day here, Andy.
It's January and early February in Pennsylvania. Welcome to the Northeast. But it has been since we got hammered with a foot plus of snow. It has been bitter cold. Like, I don't even think we've approached 25 degrees as a high for a week. So it's just bitter cold, but let's warm it up. Let's do some hot stove Penn State football.
Let's do it. Before we get there, just talking about weather, Andy, how about on Saturday, the outdoor hockey game at Penn State using Beaver Stadium?
Correct.
You know what? At least the players they're skating. They're, you know, I don't think the weather will affect them. But kudos to the fans who are going to go sit out there in that cold weather.
Yeah, I mean, they're going to see Michigan State's really good. Penn State's red hot right now. Guys got the boys playing well. They're hunting for a spot in the Big Ten Championship and the NCAA Regional. So there's a lot to watch. But, yeah, I think the wind chills are supposed to be maybe negative.
Like, it's going to be really cold, Andy. Yeah. That's all I know. You know, about a month ago, before we went into this really cold spell, a buddy of mine asked me about going to the game. And even then, without knowing what we were going to be dealing with weather-wise, that it was going to be this cold, that was already a big no for me. Yeah, late January. No. If you want to pick a date for, like, the coldest time of the year, this is that time, and sure enough, it's happened, Andy. I want no part of it. Credit to all the fans, Penn State fans, who are going to brave the cold and be out there. All right. As you said, let's get to Penn State hot stove off-season news. The big news this week, Andy, was the schedule came out. We already knew the teams that Penn State was going to play. We didn't know the order that they were going to be in. I don't think you and I have really gone through the schedule yet. We kind of waited for this with the timing. We already knew it was going to be, no other way to put it, it was going to be an easy schedule for them. And now seeing it in order week by week by week, this is a very doable schedule, Andy.
It's this is the kind of schedule where you can be phony good if you're not legitimately a good team. It's not who's not on the schedule, right? Indiana, defending national champions. Ohio State, defending national champions from 2 years ago. But there's also no Iowa on this schedule. There's no Oregon on this schedule. There's not even Michigan State on this schedule. So they have one tough stretch. I see three games that are their three toughest games. Remember, when you have to look at this differently now, when you're talking about new coaching system, transfer portal, a lot of new players in, but a lot of familiar faces that'll be playing major roles, and we'll get into that later in the show. But what I want to point out is there was a talent thing under James Franklin. If they had more talent, 90-95% of the time, they would win the football game. We know the big game stuff, so we'll just put that over on its little coffee table to the side. But having said that, I think there is a roster imbalance for what you're used to as a Penn State football fan, that this will be a more balanced with the rest of the field type roster. They're going to have to play their way into beating teams more often than just beating teams with talent. So that's a big difference for me.
Yeah, I think I'd put it, Andy, there's not a lot of star-level players on this team compared to a year ago. And it struck me when I saw an article, I think it was for the upcoming season, the 100 best players in college football, and there were no Penn State players there.
People like
a year ago, the star power on this team, Katron Allen, Nick Singleton, Vega Ioane,
Drew Aller,
AJ Harris, Drew Aller, Tony Rojas, Zane Durant, Deni Dennis Sutton. There was that star power. So it's going to have to win as a team. Let's take a look. Let's go through the schedule, Andy, and take a look at things. Once more, the out-of-conference schedule, Charmin soft here. Marshall at home, at Temple, home with Buffalo. Is there any reason why they're not coming out of the gate 3-0?
It's hard to see them losing a game. I don't think they will be the kind of games. It's not a lock like last year. They played poorly last year in those first three games. Now, continued under James, they played poorly and got away with it. I'm not sure this roster can play that poorly, perform that poorly in a similar way, and really expect to be 3-0. So I'm not expecting them to play like crap. But gosh, I sound like that they're going to be a crappy football team. It's just going to be a little more balanced. They're going to have to play. They're going to have to bring their B game to win these. You know what I mean? C game would be sticky. A game they win going away. That's just the way the roster will be built.
I think these teams are bad enough, Andy, that even the C level performance should be okay. I think, and we're going to get into the roster a bit today, but I think the fact that the offense has so many people from the Iowa State team, quarterback, running back, wide receiver, tight end, that transition period that might be rough otherwise should be softened up a little bit.
Yeah, no, you're not wrong.
And you know, I don't think at Temple should be a concern to folks. I don't think we have that issue that we had a few years back where Temple actually whooped them. Then they opened their Big Ten schedule at home with Wisconsin, a team that was very disappointing last year.
Talk about a team in the abyss. I mean, they don't have an identity.
I want to lump the first two, you know, the Wisconsin and at Northwestern together, Andy, because I think those, despite what happened last year with Northwestern, they should be okay. But first two Big Ten games, home at Wisconsin and at Northwestern, as you're wearing your Northwestern sweatshirt.
Yeah, I think Northwestern, obviously it's a road game. I think that's a sticky wicket test for me. The way Northwestern builds its roster in the transfer portal under this coach, and the way they sort of play, like, you have to meet them halfway across the room. You can't just show up and beat Northwestern. They will beat you. They will believe they can play with you, and they will beat you. They have become a little bit more of a – they become a tough out if you don't meet them halfway across the room. If your talent doesn't show up, if your best players aren't your best players, they will beat you. So that's a road game. To me, the easier of the two, I think Wisconsin, because they're just so lost and they don't have an identity and you don't really know who they are. I think you know exactly who Northwestern is, and they will provide you more of a test. Good first road test before you really kind of hit what is essentially the meat of Penn State's schedule.
Yeah, I agree. That's an excellent point, that for their first road conference game, rather it be Northwestern.
Yep.
If they do lose or truly test, you know, that means it's a statement about the quality of this team. You hit it right, though, Andy, also. Coming up, meat of the schedule, back-to-back, USC at home, and then at Michigan.
Yeah. USC at home is helpful because Penn State traditionally plays better at Beaver Stadium. Doesn't matter who the coach is. USC is a landmine team. I think they're in the conference. They're like the box of chocolates. They were kind of a second tier middle team, but they kind of played pretty well, but they lost some games you sort of expected them to lose, but lost a couple games you didn't expect them to lose. They lost their DC to Penn State. So Michigan is at Michigan, road game, new coaching staff, veteran quarterback. What is Michigan going to look like? Is it going to, they're set up for Kyle Whittingham, who came over from Utah to coach. Like, they're set up for that. They have the kind of personnel that sets up for him. That's a bear of a game right there. I think that's a real Full Metal Jacket test, I think, for Penn State. I think they could lose both those games. I really do. I think they could lose to both USC and Michigan unless some star power emerges on this roster from a place we don't expect it.
I think, Andy, you looked at the USC game from Penn State's perspective. They play better at home. But I think let's look at it for just a moment from the USC perspective. They have to go across the country. If this were being played at USC, we would say that about Penn State. That's the issue. And the quick thought about Michigan, as opposed to Penn State's schedule, Michigan does have Ohio State and Oregon and Indiana. I'm not sure what effect that has on this particular game, but I think it's worth pointing out. Finally, Andy, the stretch run, five games, Purdue, at Washington, home to Minnesota, home to Rutgers, and at Maryland. Looks like the one big test in that one is at Washington. And as I mentioned earlier about USC having at home rather than flying to the West Coast, well, Washington, you fly to the West Coast.
Yeah, that's a 50-50 game all the way for me. I think Washington is moving in a positive direction. Here's the thing. Last five games, lump them together. Penn State goes 4-1. Are you happy? Doesn't matter who they lose to, kind of. They just dropped one of those final five games. That's success in my book. I think that's a successful stretch run. You win four of your last five football games. They could win all five, possibly, maybe. It's that kind of schedule. They get a bye in there before Purdue, but 4-1 is acceptable, a realistic expectation.
Andy, I'm going to ask you this question when we get back. Prior to the season starting, how many games will Penn State be favored? How many will they be the underdog? I'm going to ask you that when we return.
Happy Valley United is the NIL collective that serves all 31 sports and over 850 student-athletes at Penn State. These opportunities allow student-athletes to engage with charitable causes and participate in business engagements to build their brands while making a positive impact. The collective connects fans, alumni, businesses, and charities with student-athletes harnessing the power of Nittany Nation. Go to happyvalleyunited.com to connect with your favorite Nittany Lion team.
It's quarter number two on the Keystone Kickoff Show, brought to you by the Keystone Sports Network. Get the best Penn State sports news and analysis at KeystoneSportsNetwork.com or download the Keystone Sports app from your smartphone.
Hello and welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show, quarter number two. He's Andy, I'm Jim. Andy, I teased this at the end of the first quarter. My question for you, we went over the schedule. 12-game schedule, an easy schedule. I think we're in agreement there. You know, when you don't have Indiana, Ohio State, Oregon, Iowa, Illinois. But if you look at this schedule, you look at the 12 games prior to the season starting, and I know a lot of things could change, especially during the season, but looking at things now, if you were an odds maker, how many of these 12 games would you have Penn State the favorite? How many would you have as the underdog? And I guess I'll throw you a bone. You could call a game a toss-up if you like.
I have them an underdog against USC at home, at Michigan, at Washington. I think the Northwestern game could be a toss-up. to be honest with you. So I think that's the favorite in eight. I think they're the favorite in eight games. They're the underdog at three, and there's one toss-up. So 8-3-1.
I will go maybe just one game better. I think they will be favored, would be favored even at Northwestern. USC, the fact that it's home and USC has to go cross-country, I'll call that one a toss-up. I don't know if it helps. That's the most attractive home game, you know, would be nice for that one to be the whiteout. We'll see, which I think skews things even a little more. I'll make them underdogs at Michigan. I'll make them an underdog at Washington also because of that cross-country deal. Just going by favored, not favored, Andy, we've got them somewhere 8, 9, 10 wins. What would be a successful season knowing this schedule?
Eight's a good number. Nine's above board. 10 is excellent. 7 is not a disaster, but not what you're looking for. And it could end up being 7, you know, but an injury here or there. But 8 is my number. I think that is a realistic expectation, despite the schedule. A tougher schedule, this helps, right? In year one for Matt Campbell, this helps. This schedule 300% helps. This is an opportunity. So set a bar realistic. That's why I went with 8. 9 would be above board. 10 would be outstanding. 10 makes you a playoff team.
I'm going to go, again, just one game better. I think I would be a little disappointed at 8-4. I think 9-3, they could feel good about things. I think 10 wins is a possibility there. If they could sneak that win against USC, I think 10 wins could be possible. All right, Andy, let's change gears as promised. You know what? These games, this isn't a video game. These are real guys, real players who go out there and have to perform. It's been such a changeover in the roster. I don't think many of our listeners really would recognize many of these names. So I thought, even though it's way too early, let's kind of go through this roster position by position and maybe just get that first blush, that first, you know, high up view of this team. Let's start with the quarterback position, Andy. Essentially, the entire quarterback room has left. I think a lot of fans would have loved to have seen Ethan Grunkmeyer come back. Was not to be. And what we have is the Iowa State quarterback room coming over. Rocco Beck, Alex Mansky. Your thoughts at that position overall?
It's where Penn State's star power, to me, right out of the gate. That's their star, right? Rocco's their potential star. He will drive the offense. The offense will be built around him being the quarterback that he is. He is a true vet, right, Jimmy? He's played under the OC and the QB coach. Everything's familiar to him. The system will be familiar. He's got 3 years as a starter, more than 1,000 career pass attempts. Think about that. 9,000-plus passing yards. Fewer than 30 picks, so he knows how to take care of the ball. Twice as many touchdowns as interceptions, always a good number. I know he's coming off a shoulder surgery, so he's going to be limited in the spring, right? And don't worry about that. I know Penn State fans will be like, we want to see our new quarterback. Don't worry. This guy's been around the block and knows exactly what it takes to walk off. And he's got, as we talked about in the first quarter, he doesn't have an Alabama hammer scheduled to face. Healthy, upright, he is the focal, the center, the talking point, the engine, the steam, the coal that drives Penn State's offense will start and end with Rocco. Everybody around him is complimentary pieces. He is the man offensively.
I look at it just a tad differently. I think he will be the straw that stirs the drink, to use another analogy there. But I think there's a high floor that you get with Rocco back. He's been around, as you said, he's a veteran. And we've seen over these last couple of years just the value of that veteran quarterback. He's a veteran of the system. You know, the head coach, the offensive coordinator, everybody, everything's in place. He's going to be just like he was in Ames, Iowa. He'll look at those blue and white uniforms and say, hey, what's this all about? Because that'll be the only difference for Rocco back. And maybe this is just looking at it a little differently. I don't think of Rocco Beck as a variable. I think of him as a constant. We know what we're getting from him. He's going to be good. I don't think he's going to be great. I don't think we're going to see him in New York at the Heisman ceremony, but we know he'll be solid. The other thing, just to mention with the injury, the injured shoulder, I believe it was his non-throwing shoulder that had surgery. So not the same level of concern with that. And as you pointed out, Andy, if we don't see him in the spring, you know, so be it. The guy doesn't need that. I think the other part to this equation is Mansky. And I made this comment. I was asked before the changes were made, Jim, you got your choice. Grunkmeyer or Beck, who are you taking? And my comment was Grunkmeyer. And the tiebreaker was Grunkmeyer would be available for multiple years, where Rocco Beck is a one-year situation. However, this is Beck and Mansky versus Ethan Grunkmeyer. Mansky, not a name that you've heard a lot of, but you will. This is a guy very highly regarded, going to Iowa State last year, Andy. Very highly regarded. The fact that Matt Campbell brought him along. And the other thing is, here's a kid who's willing to say, I know I'm going to be a backup for another year. And I'm okay with that. I'm ready to learn. So if he does take over in 27, it will be his third year with Matt Campbell and the offensive coordinator and the offensive coaching staff. So when it's Beck and Mansky versus Grunkmeyer, Andy, I'm more than okay with it.
Penn State upgraded at the quarterback position with Rocco Beck over Ethan Grunkmeyer, and the combination with Alex Mansky gives him a future plan. It's variable because of the transfer portal, but at least they have a plan now. Overall, I think the better quarterback is Beck over Grunkmeyer. It doesn't matter. His experience shows, but I just think he's a better quarterback. So it wouldn't have been a bad option for Penn State, but this is better. And this combination is exactly what you sort of needed. It gives you the stability, gives Mansky a shot, but also gives you the ability to dip your toe in the transfer portal water if you want to.
Agreed, Andy. I do think for this year alone, yeah, probably Rocco Beck, the experience factor is huge here. And we've seen this in the playoffs the last 2 years. Having that experienced quarterback really makes a difference. My thoughts on Grunkmeyer, what made him attractive was having him for multiple years. I think, you know, Mansky's presence kind of nullifies that advantage for Grunkmeyer. All right, Andy, let's get to another position. Let's go to running back where, you know, Penn State for the last 3 years had two tremendous running backs. Okay. Studs. Yes, absolute studs. You build the offense around them. They're gone. But I think there's a situation here where there were multiple good young running backs at Penn State. I thought it was a bit of a surprise they were able to keep Quentin Martin, who looked so impressive in the bowl game. They brought in Carson Hansen, who had a big year with Iowa State. Actually, Andy, he had a big couple years with them. Correct. So he's very solid. And you bring in a little bit of a wild card, very highly regarded coming out of high school, James Peoples from Ohio State. I think the quantity you have there really is helpful, the depth.
James Peoples, the transfer from Ohio State, he's the potential star at the running back position. They're going to run a lot of 12. We know that. But at Ohio State, in that offense, with that much talent around him, he's got over 100 carries the last 2 years, and he's averaging close to about 5 yards a carry in sort of an RB3 backup role completely. Nothing, you know, first tier about him. That's showing that given a next tier opportunity, there's some serious meat on the bone. You mentioned Hansen, right? Like, I think this is a three pony stable. I think you have to use all three. I think Hansen, last two years, more than 1,700 yards the last two seasons, a little bit of pop to him, finished strong. He had 500-yard games in his last five games last year, so ready to play. And I think Quentin Martin is the third one. He's the surprise you said to stay. I think they're going to like what they see out of him and say, look, we can be better. And you frankly got to use it. Despite using a 12 personnel, they bring a little bit different to the table, each one of them. But to me, James Peoples, the transfer from Ohio State, is the potential RB1 sort of glitter guy.
All right, Andy, that's the last word. We'll pick up the offense in quarter four. But now it's Ask Andy. Stay tuned.
Happy Valley United is the NIL collective that serves all 31 sports and over 850 student-athletes at Penn State. These opportunities allow student-athletes to engage with charitable causes and participate in business engagements to build their brands while making a positive impact. The collective connects fans, alumni, businesses, and charities with student-athletes harnessing the power of Nittany Nation. Go to happyvalleyunited.com to connect with your favorite Nittany Lion team.
Let's get back to the action on the Keystone Kickoff Show. Brought to you by the Keystone Sports Network. Get the best Penn State sports news and analysis at KeystoneSportsNetwork.com or download the Keystone Sports app from your smartphone.
Hello and welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show. It's quarter number three. That means you take over the show. It's our listener questions. It's Ask Andy. Andy's favorite segment, because it stops being my questions and starts being your questions. I've decided, Andy, we're like an old married couple. You just don't pay attention to me anymore. You don't listen to me anymore, Andy. You like the variety. You like to venture out there and get questions from other folks. That's okay. I don't mind being taken for granted. So let's move right to the questions.
Let's do it. Questions, right. Please.
Andy's just sitting there going, please, let's move on. All right, let's start with Matt from Massachusetts. He's a regular. Matt says, Jim and Andy, I'd like for Matt that he includes me in these questions. Matt from Massachusetts says, Jim and Andy, first off, a belated welcome to the off season. I'd like to get your opinion on this. This was asked on a local sports show. What kind of team plays better? Dome teams versus outside teams. The argument is that the dome teams have less endurance and tolerance playing outside, especially in adverse conditions, compared to teams that play mostly in indoor fields. I think this argument would mostly apply to the NFL, but just wanted to hear what you have to say about this. Let's have another great year of shows.
Yeah, I think it is an NFL thing. Maybe you get a little cold versus warm occasionally. You know what I mean? Teams say, you know, in the southern tier or out in California. But, boy, domes in college, there's some – I don't see a lot of them, I think, outdoor stadiums. So I don't think it plays much of a factor, Matt. I'll be honest with you. I do – like that some of the home playoff games could be in cold weather venues in the first round of the college football playoffs, because they're played in December. I love that. I think it adds another intriguing element to the game, but I think it's more, here's the only thing I'll say. You play how you practice. If you're used to practicing in the cold, playing in the cold doesn't impact you much. If you have to create sort of an environment to get you in that for practice, then there is an adjustment time frame and time period in a game if that's not your normal. You know what I mean? Like you practice, you play how you practice. Practice in cold, you're used to the cold. It doesn't take you as long to get used to cold. You practice it a little bit warmer, but then you have to play in the cold. There is a little bit of a small adjustment period. That's the only thing I see is the difference off the top of my very bald head.
Practice? You're talking practice. I'll tell you what, Andy, I'll take a little different angle on this. I think if you have a unique home venue, cold versus dome is just one of those kind of aspects. If you're the Buffalo Bills, you're building a new stadium. You make sure it's still an outdoor field because you want to make sure, you know, you have that cold advantage. But there's other things. Hey, if a northern team has to go down south in early September, heat could be the issue. If you go to Denver, the elevation could be an issue.
Yeah,
I think if you have a stadium with a lot of noise, that kind of thing, that makes it different. Beaver Stadium in a whiteout is a bit of a unique situation. So I think whenever you have something unique or special at your home field, that gives you the advantage. All right, Andy, let's go to Vic in Johnstown, who says, who has the better first-year record, James Franklin or Matt Campbell? Which will be considered the better hire in 5 years? Will they still be at their current jobs in 5 years?
Oh, man.
That's a loaded question.
That is loaded. I think, okay, so Big Ten versus the ACC. But Penn State's Big Ten schedule is favorable. So in a one-year window, Vic, I'm going to go with Penn State. Now, Virginia Tech did get rid of their James Madison game. They made that go away. So good job, James. You added one to your ledger there. 5 years, I think Matt Campbell sticks. James proved he stuck at Penn State more than a decade. I think the floor starts lower at Virginia Tech. So I don't know if he wins 9 and 10 games over a 3-year period, they're building a statue. You know what I mean? The rise to ascension can be greater. The measuring stick, 9 or 10 wins at Penn State is expected. 9 or 10 wins at Virginia Tech, they're building statues right over the same 3-year period. So there's an expectation. 5 years, I think they're both still coaching at those schools. I still think they're both coaching at their schools.
I think you're right that Matt Campbell has the advantage of the easier schedule, especially this first year. And I think you're right also, Andy. 5 years. Matt Campbell is the safe, stable coaching choice. Penn State is also the kind of place where they will allow a coach a little more leeway, I think, than most places.
Agree.
James Franklin, I'll just add this one volatile element to it. Matt Campbell does really well here. He stays here. James Franklin does really well at Virginia Tech. James would leverage it for another job without blinking. All right, let's see. Jeremy from Newark, Delaware says, remember our Newark guy. That's how I remember him. Jeremy says, how much has the head coaching position changed in college football? Is there a different skill set necessary today than there was before?
Yeah, good question, Jeremy. And the answer is it's changed, I think, dramatically. I think with all the, your staff is now bigger. And I'm not just talking your coaching. I'm talking you have to have a recruiting staff. You have to have a portal staff. You have to have there's general managers sort of, you know, now needed. You need to look at your roster management. You're looking, it's not a quote unquote salary cap, but how much you know, money do you have to spend on recruits? How much money do you have to spend? It's a CEO role that's, you know, there isn't really an off season per se. You know, there's a lot more to manage. I think you do less. There's less, quote unquote, hands on. There's less time for integral hands on coaching that all coaches love. And that's why I say it's become more of a CEO role. If you can't delegate well and hand responsibility off and truly hand it off and not be a fly in the ointment and you know, cause a nasty buzz just because you're a meddler, you're not going to cut it. Good, a CEO needs to delegate and let go. Delegate and let go. Step in when needed, but don't be just stepping in because you think you're a coach still. So I think it's changed dramatically. Since post-COVID, dramatically, it has changed, in my opinion, and it continues to evolve, and that's the turnover that you're seeing.
I agree, Andy, and I think, and everyone uses the expression, it's turned into professional sports now. It's professional football. Well, and I get it because of the dollars. But also the analogy to the professional sport is the role of the general manager and roster management. You know, this is what was the Andy Frank position. That position has changed even more. It's not just a question of, gee, what quality players can we recruit? It's how are you going to manage the money? Yes, some schools have more money than others, and they throw that money around. But it's still roster management. You know, if I, you know, pay Peter too much, there's less for Paul. All right, let's get another one in here, Andy. Okay. Jeff from Youngstown says, hey, guys, is your enthusiasm the same for college football as it was a few years ago? With so many players coming and going, it is tough for me to stay as interested.
Yeah, That's a fair point, Jeff. And I still like Saturday, right? I still like the games. I still like the arena. I still like the theater that is college football. Everyone thinks money's changed it. I think money changes it the other 6 days of the week. I think on Saturday it's your school, it's your town that. It's your university. It's against your rival or against your conference team. I think that theater hasn't dwelled. Maybe it's gone up. But what has changed is the other side of the game that I like to sort of follow and track, which is, you know, progressions and roster development and how you're using, you know, not players 1 through 22, but players 25 through 50. And what does that look like? I think the turnover there is so great. It is impossible to keep up, Jeff. So I kind of miss that part of the game because I don't just do it for Penn State. There's a lot of I love that part of the game, but that part of the game now becomes nearly impossible to track as a fan. So that's why it makes sense. But I think the theater and everything that, and the pageantry and everything that goes, the competitiveness that goes along with Saturday, that still is at the same level, maybe even getting a little bit more with the expanded playoffs. But everything else around it, the other 6 days, following recruiting classes, following talent development, difficult, very difficult to track that now.
Andy, and I'm glad the last thing you said about was perhaps it's even better. I think the game in general is better with the expanded playoffs, and we've got more teams involved. More teams are entering. It's not Ohio State, Alabama, and Georgia every single year. Those are the only teams who could win a national championship. New teams are involved. Yeah, I get the – if following a team loyally with great loyalty and you see this guy that you followed through his high school recruiting process, he commits, and then he's gone, that's tough on fans. But, you know, the bottom line is, Andy – like the old expression, we all root for laundry. You may have liked Ethan Grunkmeyer. You'll end up liking Rocco Beck, too. That's the way it's going to be. That's it, Andy. We got one more segment to go. Stick with us.
Happy Valley United is the NIL collective that serves all 31 sports and over 850 student athletes at Penn State. These opportunities allow student athletes to engage with charitable causes and participate in business engagements to build their brands while making a positive impact. The collective connects fans, alumni, businesses, and charities with student athletes harnessing the power of Nittany Nation. Go to happyvalleyunited.com to connect with your favorite Nittany Lion team.
We head to the home stretch in quarter number four on the Keystone Kickoff Show. Brought to you by the Keystone Sports Network. Get the best Penn State sports news and analysis at KeystoneSportsNetwork.com or download the Keystone Sports app from your smartphone.
Hello and welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show. It's quarter number four. He's Andy. I'm Jim. Andy, let's pick back up. We were talking about this new Penn State offense for this coming season, very heavy with the Iowa State players. We talked about the quarterback. We're both the starter, the backup, the heir apparent, both coming in from Iowa State. The running backs, we talked about. You're very high on Peoples, who's coming in from Ohio State. I don't think we should overlook Carson Hansen from Iowa State, who is a real workhorse for them. He averaged 5 yards a carry for 2 years. And once more, this is a veteran guy, lots of experience. So I do think that three-headed monster, Hansen, Peoples, Quentin Martin, and I think Quentin Martin, we talked about that from the time he set foot on Penn State's campus. He's a running back who has a lot of receiver ability. Yep. So I'm not saying the other guys can't, but that's a skill set that could make it attractive to play all three of these running backs, Andy.
I agree. I think in this 12 offense and watching Iowa State's offense and digging in deeper since Matt and this staff became Penn State staff, they like their running backs to have the ability to and the flexibility for the quarterback, particularly with Rocco Beck. They like that as a integral outlet and part of their passing game.
No doubt. All right. Let's go out to wide receiver, Andy. It's a guarantee for Andy to give us the heavy sigh when we start talking about wide receivers. Every year it seems like there's a new set of receivers. But this is the year I think they'll get it right. I think it helps, Andy, that they're bringing in a couple receivers from Iowa State. So they have so much experience with Rocco Beck. I think that's the advantage that they have. I mean, you start out with Chase Soule, 6'3", 210, good size. But again, this running thread, Andy, he's a veteran guy. He's had over 500 yards receiving for three straight years. He's averaged 15, 20, and 13 yards per reception each of those 3 years. He's had over 30 catches each year. That's a good starting point, Andy.
Yeah. So here's my take on the receiver position. I think Chase, I think he was beyond Penn State and doing the actual, this guy, he's an Iowa State guy, so he'll come to Penn State. I think he was a transfer portal receiver that other schools were very, very, very interested in. I think he's the upside guy, right? Like, it just feels like it's his time. I know he's got a little bit of the dropsies that he, you know, has to fend off from time to time. Of all these receivers digging in, I'm like, okay, it's Chase Soule and anybody and everybody else. I need the first three games and then I'll let you know. I think Chase is the upside guy. I think he is a potential wide receiver one. Familiarity breeds contempt. Let's see if those two can do it at the next level, him and Rocco. He has the tools to be a next level receiver. We know Rocco's got the ability to be a next level quarterback. Can they mix and match and make that work? at Penn State. He's the upside guy. Everybody else is my box of chocolates.
Well, I think they also bringing in Brett Eskelson. I hope I'm saying that right, Andy. This is a guy who averaged over 17 yards a reception, had over 500 yards. There's something there. And again, the familiarity with the quarterback.
Yeah, he's your three shots of hit one of three or two of three shots down the field guy every single football game. He is that kind of threat. He is a one-trick pony. He's got mild other skills, but you say you look for a superpower. That's his superpower. He's a burner, and he's got a great ability to catch the ball down the field. He tracks it well. He makes tough 50-50 catches down the field. He's your big play home run threat, and he's a burner. So that's a one-trick pony, but it's his superpower.
And I think, Andy, it was a nice retention, keeping Kobe Howard from entering the portal. A young guy showed some that promise this past year. And then the rest of it,
didn't show any promise until the second regime.
Well, since that part of the regime, Terry Smith is still here, I think he'll get his shot. We'll see if anybody else could jump into the rotation, which leads us to Andy. You know what? It's Penn State. It's the tight end position. The tight end coach leaves. Multiple tight ends leave. But you know what? I think this still could be a strength there. I believe Andrew Rapoport, you know, one of my favorite guys on the team. He stuck around, which is great news. They also have Benjamin Brommer coming in, another veteran guy from Iowa State. Again, he has that connection. Got to love this. 6'7", 255, Andy. He had 37 catches last year. That's a good good combo. And I think we're going to still be seeing that 12 personnel with multiple tight ends.
You
having,
will.
Having those two guys, that's a good starting point at tight end.
I would say outside the quarterback position, this is your number two strength of this Iowa State East offense. I think Andrew Rapoport is a next level potential all around. I think Benjamin Brommer, if they can get this offense firing in the right, in a good direction that folk has some, a little bit of focus on the tight end because they can yin yang you with these two. I mean, I think Brammer's a security blanket, but I also think he's got more upside probably than any single player on offense that is coming into Penn State this year. That's just my two cents. I think he has the potential biggest upside of any single player. Can he do that in Penn State system? It's a deep room too. It's very deep. They use a lot of 12. Doesn't that just feel like 1 + 1 = 2, right? Like, it's deep. You know, both Rapoport and Brommer have NFL tools. I'm not saying they're NFL prospects legit, but they have NFL tools, and this room is deep, and they run a lot of 12. Do the math.
And Andy, you know, if you're going to play quite a bit of two tight ends, it's not a bad idea to have a third tight end. And Gabe Burke, I didn't know much, but I looked up his numbers. This is a guy who's had over 50 catches in the last 2 years, Andy. Yeah. So he, again, experienced. That's a common thread here. He adds to the depth in that room. All right, we still need to look at the offensive line, Andy, and again, this is your expression, yeah, the box of chocolates going on here. Instead of looking at it like, you know, tackle, guard, center, I think also I want to look at it a little bit, what's returning, what they have. The two guys, Anthony Donka, that's probably your right tackle.
Right tackle.
Cooper Cousins, your right guard.
Could be your center, but yeah, could be.
But those are the two returning guys that I think you got to say, okay, they should be solid starters.
This is where you get, where, you know, who is the weakest link, right? You say on offense, and it's right up here. This is it. Anthony Duncan is a returning veteran and a good right tackle. Very good right tackle. Can he get one step better? They're going to need it. I was surprised Cooper was in the role he was in a little bit last year. I thought he might end up being a starter. He needs to get better at pass blocking, and that's why he couldn't crack the lineup last year on a starting type basis. I think he gets better at pass blocking. I think he plays some way or another. After that, it's some Iowa State guys. It's some transfer portal guys. It's you know, mixing and matching and figuring out who can be in the right spots. And above all else, I don't think they're very deep. So they're very thin.
They are. And a year ago, Andy, we looked at that starting offensive line and backups, and we said, boy, this isn't just it's talented, it's deep, and it disappointed.
It disappointed. After that, they got really good.
Right. Felt like they took a step back. What I thought was interesting, the bowl game against Clemson, again, a depleted Clemson defense, but yeah, the offensive line held its own. At the center position, they've got someone named Brock Riker coming in from Texas State, who it sounds like they're high on. Dominic Rooley, who I suspected was ready to move on, Andy, but decided to come back for another year. Again, he filled in at center for that bowl game and held his own.
Yeah, it's just, to me, it comes down to who, and I think they have to start in the spring because this is the weakest link. Who wins the job, right? Like, and why do they win the job? I just think, so we know the two Penn State guys that are coming in, they desperately need a left tackle. I really think that's the sort of boil or the sore spot on the offensive line is like, we need to find a left tackle. We don't really have a lot of options, but we got to find one. I think once you have to find, you know, who are the candidates at left tackle, and then you mix and match from there. I still think the first three games provide them a little bit of ability to test drive and mix and match a little bit more, but this is going to be the sort of work in progress. And this is where all of that skill that we've talked about has to shine even more, because they're going to have to carry the offensive line through. Even through game 10, 11, and 12, they're still going to have to be better than, they're going to have to be not part of the problem and just part of a, they're fine. They're not a solution. They're just not part of the problem.
This is, Andy, where when you were talking about Rocco Beck being the focus, I understand that at quarterback. This is the variable. It's the offensive line. And within the offensive line, it's can they find a left tackle? A couple of young Penn Staters are back. Owen Alessini, Garrett Sexton. Would be wonderful if one of them could step up. Andy, that's it for the show. Went way too fast. Thank you. Thank you all for listening. Join us next time on the Keystone Kickoff Show.
Happy Valley United is the NIL collective that serves all 31 sports and over 850 student-athletes at Penn State. These opportunities allow student-athletes to engage with charitable causes and participate in business engagements to build their brands while making a positive impact. The collective connects fans, alumni, businesses, and charities with student-athletes harnessing the power of Nittany Nation. Go to happyvalleyunited.com to connect with your favorite Nittany Lion team.